And again, for another continuing episode series on Branson Podcast Network, we are proud to invite all of our listeners in across our area counties and across the world. It is Branson Podcast Network, and this is our continuing series with the Heart of the Emergency Worker podcast series. It is powered by Arvest Bank. I am Josh Grisham, joined in studio with my co-host and the creative mind behind this podcast series, Miss Pamela Yancey. Pam, it is good to be back in the studio with you, back behind the mic, as we have had more great submissions in, and we've got more heroes to find and more stories to tell.
It is great to be here today with you, Josh, and with our guests today. I am loving these podcasts. I hear a lot of positive comments out in the community. And so hopefully we're accomplishing what we set out to do, which is to share with folks the other side of the story for those people who go out and do great things in our community. And they just do it because that's who they are, right?
Yes, yes. And the best part about it is, I think you would agree with me, is that if you have somebody that you would like to nominate, the story is very deserving. It's really easy to do. They can go to BransonPodcastNetwork.com under the Arvest Bank tab, and the nomination form is real easy. You'll see the podcast series down below, a quick bio. They click that link, and they can make a nomination real easy. It goes to our office team, and before you know it, your story will be selected. You'll be in the studio with us sharing your story.
That's right. It's the easy button, Josh. That's what it is. The easier you make it, the more likely someone is to do it, right?
Yes. Well, in this story, I am very, very excited to bring you all. This is a young lady, as we were getting prepared for the podcast series and this particular episode, we were talking to her, and it's cool. The choice she made to serve the community in a unique way. Animals, they're a part of our families, and there are a lot of animals in the community, but it takes a very, very special and unique individual to manage that. You think about connecting family or actually animals with shelters. You think about connecting animals with a potential forever home. There's a lot more that goes into it. And it takes a good heart to do that as well. So I'm proud to welcome our guest in this episode, Miss Ashley Hurst. So welcome to the show, young lady. Thank you so much for saying yes and being here with us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So, Ashley, now, we were kind of talking off the air as we were getting ready for the episode and getting everything secured. You have loved animals for a very, very long time. So I say long time. We'll be specific. How far back does it go for you?
I have loved animals my entire life. I was the kid who brought stuff home to my parents, which was annoying to them.
Yeah.
I got into working with animals about 18 years ago, so it's just kind of excelled from there.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
18 years ago. So growing up, what type of pets did you have growing up? You said bring stuff back home to mom and dad.
Yeah.
What pets did you have growing up as a kid?
Just dogs and cats mainly. Had some pet frogs at one point, but that didn't last too long.
So did you have more dogs than cats or
yes.
vice versa?
Yes. My family was mostly dog people. I happen to like cats, but we had a lot more dogs.
Okay. Okay. And then as far as pets that you have now, what pets do you have now?
Oh, goodness. I have three dogs, two cats, a pet pig, and two goats.
That's a lot of pets.
That's a lot of pets.
Yes.
So now the pigs and goats, how did you come to find that? That tells me that possibly the family has a farm. That's pretty cool. How did you come up with that?
I don't have a farm. I actually worked as a zookeeper for a while and ended up with my first potbelly pig. And unfortunately, he passed away a couple months ago. So we just got a new little guy. He was just born in August. So we've added him to the family. And the goats we got to be a friend with our first pig.
Okay.
So they just kind of, we moved into a new house and added some goats to our life.
That's amazing. Yeah. So when it comes to the zookeeping, when did you get involved with zookeeping? And I mean, that's a very interesting connection. How did that happen?
I had taken a break from working. I became very sick several years ago. So I took a break and then ended up wanting to go back into working. And I just happened to go apply at the zoo here in town. So I started working there and ended up with my pet pig because of that, which he was great. I loved him.
Was it Promised Land Zoo?
It was, yes.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So this is all setting this entire scene for your career and where it's going right now. What is it, if I had to ask you, when it comes to animals, what is it that is most special to you when working with animals?
I think, especially like with me, I'm a socially awkward person. I don't like being in big groups of people. And so I would rather surround myself with animals because I don't really They don't care how much money you have or how big your house is or any details like that about you. They just love you. They make your life so much better, and it helps ease anxiety and just makes life happier.
Could that have been any better said?
No, not at all.
Yeah,
that was perfect. And you are so true. Animals just love you no matter what, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're good to them, even if you're not good. I mean, animals are so loving. They're so forgiving. I just wish people had more of those traits, don't you?
I wish they just
accepted you for who you are. And they're so happy. You know, they just, my little puppy, when I would get home, he was just so excited to see me. You know, he passed away a couple years and I loved him so much. I haven't been able to get another dog just because I love him so much. So
you both have had pet losses in a close period of time.
Yeah.
They become extensions of us without question. I mean, it's you making the decision to adopt. That's why I always tell people, it's like, you're not shopping. Don't shop, adopt.
Yeah.
Please do that, because when it comes to animal control, I just love to know, like, why did you choose that? Did you have people that you knew that were in the business as far as the community and the county that kind of drove you to that? Was it that natural progression? Because I can imagine that is a very hard thing, because the scenarios for you in the day-to-day can probably change.
Yeah.
You probably have seen some incredibly difficult things being out in the field, stuff that it drives you. I mean, again, it's going to push you maybe to be better. Have community education. So I'm backtracking. I'm rambling. I'm thinking of all these questions I want to ask Ashley, but let's go back to that beginning. Just what kind of propelled you towards animal control? Was there connections there, or was it just kind of that natural progression for you?
I had also worked in vet clinics, and during the time in vet clinics, I got really interested in rescue animals.
Uh-huh.
I ended up fostering pets for a rescue group. And I worked at the shelter there for a little while, several years ago. And so it just, like, it's kind of like an addiction. Once you start doing this, you're like, it just becomes something you always want to do.
So
I just kind of progressed into this. I had worked at our police department several years ago.
Okay.
As a dispatcher.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever they were hiring for my job, I ended up applying for it and I got rehired at the PD.
Right on.
So yeah, I kind of just fell into place.
That is really, really cool.
Yeah.
So being in dispatch with the police department, I definitely am curious now. Did you get a chance to work with any of the canine units by chance, or any of the dogs? Did you get a chance to do any of that or get connected with the dogs?
No, but I do that more so now.
Okay.
Because I'm actually in the PD with all the cops, and I interact with their dogs whenever they have them around. So, yeah.
What is that like for you? Because that's got to be really, really special, because those dogs are so highly trained, so incredibly smart. What's that part of your life like, getting a chance to get connected with the dogs?
I don't have, like, a very strong connection with them, simply because they're under their handlers, like, grass most of the time, so they're only allowed to do certain things. But you can pet their head or just talk to them or whatever, and it just depends on what kind of mode they're in during that time,
especially if they're in work mode. I imagine the dogs just in their own way are probably just dialed in. They're locked in.
They have a lot of energy too, so they're usually all over the place.
That sounds like my puppy right now that I was telling Pam about before we got recording the episode. So animal control, how many years are you into your career with animal control so far?
Six
years. So far in that 6 years, if you had to define it for us, what would be the best part of the job so far?
I've made a lot of impacts on animals' lives. There's been several animals that I became very invested in. We get animals that are lost for, like, long periods of time, and it's like, I really enjoy challenges, so I, like, put effort into, you know, trying to find these animals that nobody else can find, or dealing with animals that no one else really wants to deal with. So, and like live trapping animals, a lot of people don't know about that. Like, if they're scared, I am real big into doing that. I like I said, it's a challenge, and those are my favorite parts.
You touched on something that's really cool, and it's going to be a natural progression to my next question for you, Ashley, because as community members, that's why we put these series together, because it really gives us as a community a fresh set of eyes, a new perspective. We can actually look inside of your career and understand what goes into the day-to-day. So a typical day for you, what time do you clock in? What time do you clock out? Or is it even a clock in and out scenario, because calls can come in whenever they are? What is a typical day like for you in the field?
I have a pretty good schedule. I go in at 8 and I'm off at 6.
Okay.
If they're, I don't typically get called in for stuff unless it's like a really big emergency. Over the years, we've kind of got our police officers and other staff used to just dealing with minor stuff.
Yeah.
So on my days off and in the evenings, it's pretty under control now by everybody, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
So just between 8 and 6, sometimes it might go a little past 6, depending on what's going on.
Okay. Okay.
So but I have a question.
Good.
So yes. How are you made aware of like an animal out in the community or whatever? Is it because somebody calls the police mm-hmm. department and says, hey, there's a sick kitten over here? And then once you go get them, what do you do with the animals?
Well, most of our calls come in through dispatch. I go through police dispatch. And so they'll call in and let you know what's going on. And maybe there's a stray animal running at large, or maybe there was a dog bite or something crazy. So that's where I respond to these things. I also am very active on Facebook, and people post their lost pets or maybe they got away from them somewhere, and I typically will like screenshot that kind of stuff and then work on it throughout my day at work as well.
Wow. So you reunite lost pets with their owners. I love that.
That is,
I try to. Yeah.
That's a lot. That's a lot. And I would say this, there's probably in anything that we do, there is a success rate and there is a failure rate. And we never want to err towards the failure rate because something like that has got to be heartbreaking and challenging. You mentioned the animal trapping side of that.
Mm-hmm.
What all does that entail? And I would imagine just the business and your approach and working with animals, you've learned so much. I would think as a community member, I would just want to know, how does that process go? And how does the humane side of that come into play? And how difficult is that for you?
As far as like animal trapping and stuff, over the years I've learned, you know, like people see a dog and they're like, oh, I want to chase it and try to catch it. But you absolutely do not want to do that. It's better just to kind of talk to them in their own space. You know, if you have to leave food for several days and just kind of get them used to things. And then you can start working on getting them into a trap so that way you can get a hold of them. But yeah, I'm very like, I've learned a lot over the years as far as like my approach to them. It's a lot softer and you kind of learn to just, you know, let them kind of come at their own pace, which is much easier than what some people want to do.
So they set their own timeline, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. And sometimes it's hard to be patient, but I've learned that over the time too, to try and allow myself to not be too pushy or get too, worked up when it's not going at my own terms.
So when you live trap an animal and it's not a lost animal that belongs to someone, it's obviously, you know, just out living on its own, do you take those to the Humane Society or what do you do?
It just depends. Our dogs go to the Taney County Animal Shelter. And right now we're contracted with the Humane Society for our cats. So depending on what it is, they'll go to one or the other, and that's where they will stay until they get adopted.
And I go back to day one when I got Ripley at Taney County Animal Control, and I just remember the influx. And I don't know, maybe I'm the weird community member, but I'm always consistently checking out the animal control page.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's just curiosity. I'm just I sit and I think to myself, I'm like, okay, am I ready to provide another forever home, or can I make a recommendation to somebody that I know?
Mm-hmm.
But you always scroll through there, and it just like, oh, it just hits me on an emotional level because I'm just like, you just want to be able to give them all homes.
Yeah.
Has there been improvement in just your set of eyes? I mean, you're in it every single day.
Mm-hmm.
What are you seeing as far as just, I guess, reciprocal, you know, cats, dogs, animals come through the shelters? Is it getting better in the field? Are we finding more animals' homes, or are you seeing more of an influx where animals are staying longer in shelters? What are you seeing with your own eyes out in the field?
To be honest, this has probably been the worst year for a lot of like groups, and it's not just here. It's like all over the U.S.
Yeah.
Animals just aren't moving as fast as they used to, and a lot of rescue groups and stuff aren't pulling animals because they, too, are also overwhelmed. So unfortunately, yeah, we're seeing dogs sit at the shelter for a very long time, which isn't ideal because obviously their quality of life kind of goes downhill during that time. But, I mean, our shelters do a really, really good job of getting them out. It's just really hard right now as far as finding homes.
Yeah, yeah. It's a hard question to ask. And, I mean, I feel like I have to be, you know, transparent with community members that listen to this episode series. Because if you're a pet owner, you have a great home. Mm-hmm. And I go back to that comment I made to Ashley and Pam about don't shop. Go in there with your heart. You adopt if you can. And that's so, so important. Ashley, just you mentioned, you know, the deterioration of the health, the conditions change and everything. The more time that passes, and I, you know, maybe I'm creating a sense of urgency here by asking you this question, but the longer an animal stays in a shelter, to be realistic and transparent, where does that go? If we're not able to provide that forever home for an animal?
I mean, typically, like I said, our shelters do a really good job. Yes, if it do. Gets to that point where an animal is just starting to get so bad that it's, you know, they're harder to adopt out because people are walking through there and they're kind of losing themselves. They start growling, barking, getting stressed, and it, you know, and then people see that and they don't want them, which is very unfortunate. Our shelters will start networking them the best they can.
Yeah.
And typically, if something is given a timeline, groups will do everything they can to try to get them out of there.
Yeah.
So ultimately, I'm sure some of them could end up being euthanized, but they do a really good job of trying to not have that happen.
So how can we, as ordinary citizens that may not be equipped to step up and adopt an animal, how can we help the animals that are currently in that situation? Is that going and buying a bag of dog food or kitty food, or is it volunteering to go walk the dogs or play with the cats? What can we do if we're not equipped to, you know, take one of them in? How can we still help?
You can take donations there, monetary donations, food donations. I would say the one thing they really need more than anything is people to go out and walk the dogs. It gets them out of their kennels, you know, so if they are one of those long-term animals, they get a break from being in those cement walls. Yeah. So that means a lot to them. They can get them out, play ball with them in the yard, or they can take them for walks. And that's so good for those dogs that are just sitting in there kind of bored and, you know, they don't have a lot of room to go anywhere. It does help them quite a bit.
So community, you heard it first here. If you're not in a position to adopt or foster, right? Because foster families for animals is very important as well.
Totally.
But if you're not in a position to do either one of those, so monetary donations, you know, going and buying some food for them. But more importantly, go spend time with the animals so that they still have that connection to humans. And think about it. You're walking the dog, right? You're getting some exercise, too. So it's
right.
really a win-win,
it's a
win-win, right?
Yeah. Yes, yes.
Gets you up off the couch and out of the house, right?
Yes.
Well, and that's something, I mean, you establish that connection, but I think the socialization factor for the animals is so, so key. You get that human connection. It does make them better. And it makes them prepare to go to that forever home at that point. So the more socialization they get, I don't think people really think about that.
No,
you can actually go
don't.
Out there and spend
socialization
that time.
Is super important. It helps their behavior and everything once they get adopted.
Well, and this, I always go full circle. You know,
I do
particular interviews, and Ashley, this is no different. We've had plenty of people that have come through, and we've gotten to the point where we always talk about the difficulties of the job and how hard that is, because it really opens our eyes collectively on the job. And you and I talked about this right when we were getting going, and I was talking about you see so much. You see the good and you see the bad. Mm-hmm. I kind of just want to touch on that a little bit and obviously talk about only what you feel comfortable talking about. But in the field, what are the hardest parts of your job, and what are the difficulties that you see in the day-to-day, whether it's conditions in a home that an animal has to be removed from, somebody that means well and just gets overextended and can't care for a dog? What are the biggest challenges for you in your career?
I mean, we do deal with some of those situations where we get dogs or cats that are like severely emaciated and not necessarily coming from a home. They may have been roaming and they're just in such poor health that it's becoming an emergency basically for them. We deal with, I would say, out of the situations we deal with, like with animals and homes, it's the people we deal with in those homes, unfortunately.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
You deal with a lot of difficult people, obviously, with animals. Emotions get really high, and people start to just, you know, they can make things a lot worse than they actually are, and that does make our jobs a lot harder, too.
Yeah. I would imagine probably in the field, too, if you are encountering a difficult owner, it's kind of my way's right. You don't know what you're talking about.
Right,
you can't question my behavior with an animal, but yet you see with your own eyes, you see what you see, and you know what's a danger and what's not.
Yeah.
I can imagine that is difficult as well.
Yep, it is.
And it's amazing. Everybody's had a different story, and it's interesting to kind of get into the mindset. When you go into these challenges and you see animals that are in bad shape, or it's a life and death situation for an animal, how challenging is it for you, knowing that you are a pet mom, right? Mm-hmm. And you have to go into these situations and see these different conditions. How do you separate this side of yourself that is a pet mom towards being in animal control and being in the field? Like, what you see in a day on your worst day, how do you separate the two, and how do you get into that mindset to process it and deal with it?
Since I have been dealing with animals for a long time, I've been very active in like animal rescue.
Yeah.
I've kind of learned to desensitize myself in a sense. And I mean, we see a lot of sad stuff, but you kind of just have to go with the flow. I mean, there's times I pick up animals that are in terrible shape. We take them to the vet, and say they need to be euthanized because that's what's best for them. I know in my heart that I'm making the right decision, because if they're in pain and suffering, then it's not worth me trying to keep them alive. It's, you know, putting them down might be the absolute best thing. So I just have to know that I made the right decision. And so, like I said, over the years, I've just kind of learned to cope with those things pretty well.
Was that something that you were able to find and do right away into your career in that first year, or did it take longer?
It hits me now and then during my job that sometimes things get a little rough, but I kind of had a grasp on it before I really started doing this.
Yeah.
Which was nice.
In this particular community, we continue to grow. We continue to get bigger. There are more homes being built every day. There are more people settling into Ozark Mountain Country. And when they come here, there are animals sometimes that come with them. So this area has just grown exponentially. Your department, your office, do you have a team, or do you serve this area on your own?
Oh, gosh. Yes, I have a supervisor, but it's me. I'm a unit of one right now.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I want to frame this up, because now if that doesn't give you a lot of respect for Miss Ashley Hurst, I don't know what will. That is a lot of families. That is a lot of animals in this area. So knowing that you have a supervisor, you are a team of one, young lady. Mm-hmm. On your busiest day, how many calls have you seen? What's that like on your busiest day? How much are you running?
It's like hit or miss. Some days I won't do anything, and other days, like Tuesday, I was just nonstop picking up cats all day. So it was just a lot. Yeah, it was like, here's a cat, there's a cat, you know.
Everywhere there's a cat, right?
Right, yeah. And back to me being a unit of one, I do get help.
Yes.
The police officers on the days I'm not here will pick up animals too. Typically work any like crazy cases, but they will pick up animals and kind of fill in wherever I'm not. So
have you ever had to take, like, if you've gone into, like we were talking about, a bad situation where someone has animals that's not being taken care of. Mm-hmm. Have you ever had to request like a police officer to go with you because you felt maybe like you were, you know, not the safest on your own? Does that happen very often, or tell us about that?
It does. Our dispatchers also, since I am by myself and I'm not like some big burly guy or anything, you know, if I'm going to go to deal with someone difficult that we know is difficult, or if I've got an aggressive dog that's like, you know, causing a lot of damage, I'm not going to go to it by myself.
Yeah.
So they automatically know to send someone with me, because like I said, I'm not a police officer. I don't have, not that they typically use guns for animals, but if it became a dire situation, I don't have those kind of things to protect myself. So,
And that brings another question around. I love the way the conversation is going. In that situation, knowing that you do not have a firearm when you're out in the field, I would like to know as a community member, how do you keep yourself safe? I mean, and the preparedness side of that, I just love to know that. I mean, that you're going to some risky situations yourself, just as any one of our EMS or rescue situations would do. Every situation is different, but how do you do that?
Well, I mean, as far as like animals go, I use catch poles and bite gloves and all kinds of safety apparatuses as far as the animals go. If I walk into a situation and someone's like, just, you know, showing me that this isn't going to be safe, I will get back in my truck and just ask for help. So I try not to deal with too much of it by myself, but I have kind of learned how to deal with people over the years also.
In this situation, has your life been at risk in this field?
I don't think so. Yet. So
knock on wood. Wow. Yeah. Knock on wood. Yeah. Yes.
I have a massive amount of respect for that. I mean, that is a tough job to do, a lot of volume. And again, it can be a calm situation right into an alarming situation. So you handle a lot, you have great supervision, but also I love the fact that you've got a lot of support within the police department. Mm-hmm. More fun question.
Okay.
Since you've been here in the area, what has been the best part of what you receive from the community, whether it is talking to great pet owners or just serving on the job every day? What has been the best thing that you've gotten from the Branson area and your career?
I don't know. I think after being here so long, because I've been very, very active in our community, I've also lived here the majority of my life. So I do know a lot of people. I think once people realize who I am, like I've noticed on Facebook, they're always like, oh, tag Ashley, she can pick that up. People in the community know who I am. So every time there's like an animal missing or lost somewhere, something's happening, it's my name is always under it in the comments. So I guess it's nice to know that people trust me and they know that I'm going to do the right thing, hopefully. And I see comments of like, oh, she's awesome. You know, she can help you. So
I love that.
Those things are nice.
Is that cool for you? Mm-hmm. Just knowing that you've got that support on social media, whether it's family member, your close friends, social circle.
Yeah.
People just know you.
It's not even people I know. Sometimes I'm like, who is this? I don't know. But
they think I'm great.
Yeah, exactly.
like it's somebody that does know you, but then like maybe 10 people down the line is like, no, I recommend her, tag her and everything. Yeah, and so that happens.
It does happen. Yeah.
So I have to ask a question. So are you strictly dogs and cats, or have there, I mean, you know, like,
are you going towards the most unusual animal?
Yes. What's the most unusual animal? Cause like in Florida, someone in your position might have to deal with an alligator or a python or something. So what's the most unusual animal you've had to deal
with?
Good
question.
I deal with everything. I do wildlife, dogs, cats, I'm involved in all the animal attractions we have here. Like, I do have to know all the animals they have and do inspections and such at those places. I don't necessarily mess with their animals, but, I mean, raccoons, skunks, groundhogs are not unusual for me to have to deal with. And I actually like dealing with wildlife. It's usually kind of fun. So,
that would beg the question, because I think about Stone County agents and I think about Taney County agents. Mm-hmm. Do you get a chance to interact with agents within the Missouri Department of Conservation?
I don't. I talk to them from time to time. I don't really do much with them as far as like in person, but yes, we do talk sometimes.
I'm picturing in my head, Ash has to go out on a call. And she goes to somebody's back porch or front porch and, you know, skunks, possums, all that stuff. That's one different thing. And we've had raccoons on our porch back when I was a kid. I remember that all the time. And you didn't know if it was a raccoon or if it was a cat. And then, boy, then when you went out there, you got a good look at the eyes. No, that's not a cat. That's not a cat. That would be, I can imagine that happens and happens quite frequently.
It does. Like, people call and they don't necessarily know what they're talking about. But also, just on one note, I don't deal with, like, nuisance wildlife. So we get people that call and they're like, I saw a fox outside. Will you come get it? No, I'm not going to come get it. We get things trapped in dumpsters or animals that are literally in, like, a life-threatening situation. Uh-huh. So that's usually when I step up and try to, you know, go and assist.
So if I have a raccoon on my back porch, don't call you. You're not going to. Okay.
Don't call Ashley.
So does the unknown make the job more interesting or more challenging? Because I was just thinking about dispatch, right? When a call comes in, and we talked about that with EMS personnel and how descriptive those calls can be, because that that helps them get a just a handle on the situation before they get there.
Yeah.
Dispatch for you, how is that different? And is it a situation for you where essentially you probably get color codes, size, and then it's angry? And what is that like? Is that accurate or is it different?
Yeah, it is sometimes. Our dispatchers always find it very amusing when I get something weird. So so usually they're like thriving in that environment, which is fun. We have a few of them who are like, oh, we're going to find you something really interesting today. And yeah, so... So it, yeah, they try to get as much info, but they usually end up laughing at me whenever I get something different. It's nice.
Is there anything for you in your career that you haven't done that you would want to do, whether it's a particular animal that you have not worked with yet in your life that would really just be kind of like a dream scenario for you or a part of your career that you've always wanted to try that you haven't been able to do yet that would push you a little bit further?
I always liked watching like the animal cop shows and things like that. Like those were always interesting. But like the major crisis, like you know when you go and help in like floods or where there's been tornadoes and such. So I've never gotten to help with anything like that. I think it would be cool. I don't know that it necessarily would be. I wouldn't be able to go do it necessarily because of my family and such. But that I think it would be fun to be able to go be a part of that, like recoveries and different things.
Is that a scenario that could conceivably come up for you in your field here? And yeah, I think about our serious storms that we've had. We've had tornadic activity come through in this particular region, but in a disaster type scenario, you would likely be right in the middle of it, would you not?
Yes. And so this is going to make my thing sound different now. I worked for our animal shelter during the tornado. I wasn't out recovering animals or anything, though. I was just kind of providing support at the shelter. So I guess I technically was helping with that, but it would be a different thing for me to be out, you know, actually pulling animals out of, you know, buildings and such. But yeah, I don't know. I think it would be kind of interesting to deal with. You'd learn a lot.
The one thing we do, and it's become a mantra for Pam and I in the series, is we talk about uncovering heroes, heroic stories. And I would imagine in some respects for you, if you're able to find a missing animal or you're able to reunite an animal with their family, mm-hmm. What are those conversations like when you have those moments and do you have a family member tell you you're my hero? Has that ever come up or what's that like for you when you have those reunion type moments, the good stuff, when you're able to kind of have that victory, if you will?
Yeah, I had one shortly after I started. We had a dog named Nolly. She was a collie, and she had been missing for a month and a half. Her family had come down here for a vacation. It was 4th of July. She got scared off by fireworks. They ended up having to leave and go home, and due to a lot of people watching out for this dog, people putting up signs and whatnot, I was able to get an idea of where this dog was at. So after a month and a half, I actually trapped her. And the family came down from Iowa to retrieve her. And it was, I don't know who set up all the media stuff, but we had a frenzy there. And it was a little interesting because I had literally just been working there like half a year. So, but yeah, they were very excited to see her. So it was cool.
That's a big deal. And even if it's not a human mm-hmm. saying this to you, I can only imagine when you take good care of these animals every day, whether it's a reunion or finding them a forever home or mm-hmm. make sure that they're getting to a shelter or a vet clinic, a better place.
Yeah.
I would imagine that that's what the pets and the animals would be saying.
Probably.
That you're their hero. How many vet clinics? Now, I wanted to kind of go back to that and touch on that a little bit because you were talking about, obviously, you taking animals to vet clinics. You probably have relationships established.
Yeah.
With all of them, when I say all of them, that's very, very vague. How many would you say, to be specific?
I know most of the vet clinics we have around here. I know at least people at them. As far as my job, we only use one vet clinic, though.
Okay.
Because we work with them. They give us, like, a discount on all of our services and such. But I have a relationship with a lot of them just simply because of having my own pets and doing rescue work and then also my job.
So I love that your job is rescuing pets, but in your off time, you're still rescuing pets. So, I mean, yeah. that
I do.
That speaks volumes about your heart, right?
It speaks volumes about your heart, but it's rewarding and it's equal parts challenging, just like the careers that we have had that have come before you and the careers that we have yet to talk about. When you're not on the job, it never stops. It never stops for you.
No, not really.
Wow. That is a lot of credit for those that are listening to this episode. I would just remind you that Ashley's work, the time that she spends in the field, but also the time she spends outside of that, is still dedicated to animals. I think that is something that we can take away from this as community stewards, just to make sure that if we happen to see a stray, obviously follow protocol, make a call. That's not a raccoon, obviously, clearly, but just understand and know education is key in this. Mm-hmm. And that is very, very powerful. That can help us just be better stewards to animals that are in our home or outside of the home. That's critical.
Yeah, it is.
So as far as community members out there that are going to hear this episode for the first time, if there was a misconception about your field or your job, what would you most want to say to the community to help them understand what you do a little bit better?
I actually just dealt with this. One of the things that it's a misconception, and not just my field, but also the animal shelter, is that everything has a date that it's going to be put down, or I'm going to catch a dog and then I'm going to kill it. I actually just had a guy the other day. He was saying something about, oh, the dog's going to go die now. And I was like, why would that happen? And he goes, because that's what you people do. And granted, a lot of shelters throughout, you know, long, like years and years ago, that was a thing that they had to do quite often. But that's not what it's about now. And I wouldn't do this job if that was the outcome of any of the animals that we deal with. It would never happen. So I wish people in the community, because they do it to the shelter too, they think that they put everything down. And it's an education thing, I guess, but it's a huge misconception.
I didn't want to stop you, but I just...
No, you're fine.
You're totally right about that. I'm just going to call it what it is. It's an unfair assessment.
Right.
And you made that case right at the beginning of this conversation, taking us inside that process with the shelters. Mm-hmm. This is it. I mean, is as far away as the last resort as it could possibly be. And you highlighted that perfectly. So I would just tell you, you're listening to this, don't be one of those community members that goes right to that, because that is unfair.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to stop you. Go ahead and continue that point, though.
You're fine. It's just something we all deal with. Like I said, the shelter hears it all the time, too. And it's those people at the shelter work their butts off, basically. They do so much for those animals, and that wouldn't be an outcome that they wouldn't be able to work there either if that was what we were doing with everything that we dealt with.
Well, young lady, you've got heart and metal. And I think we've established that, because even if you were faced in that scenario, I can't imagine how you would do the day to day. You see the tough stuff. You see the good stuff. And just like any other emergency worker we've got out there in the field, you have to wade through that. You have to process it. You have to deal with it. And just as you said, you have to kind of desensitize yourself. Doesn't mean that you have any less or a smaller heart. You just have to get yourself in the right mindset to do the work. And it's not easy, because my pet has a limp from time to time, and she gets older, and it breaks my heart. And so you have to see worse. And again, that takes a lot. It takes a special person. It really does.
It does. Yeah.
So you say you have some goats, pigs, cats, and dogs, right? What is one animal, if there were no obstacles, what is one animal that you would love to give
money,
a home
money
to?
Money is no object.
Yeah,
right,
money's no object, or barriers, or whatever. You know, you could just say, I would love to make one of those a part of my family.
A capybara. It's the world's largest rodent. I've always thought they were really cool, so.
Oh my gosh. That's wild.
I've thought about that a little bit. Yeah. It could live outside with my pigs. They love water. So.
that's so cool. Yeah. That is so cool. Well, Ashley Hurst, I want to say for Pam, Arvest Bank, and this podcast series, we were looking forward to this, and you absolutely delivered. It was really cool to be able to just take a walk with you and just go through your career, unpack it, and learn about what you do and what you see day to day. You are a tough lady, big heart. You've got an amazing team that surrounds you with those police officers. I think about Eric Schmidt. Yeah. I think about all the people down there that can help you out.
We have a lot of great police officers.
Do you ever have to call like Ted Martin and say, hey, I need a fire truck over here to get a cat out of the tree or anything like that? Do you ever have to call the fire department?
Come up?
I don't call them. Dispatch will occasionally. We do occasionally need the firefighters to come help us.
Oh,
no. So it's really a joint effort, right? I mean, you got this whole department, you got this whole city government thing behind you supporting you, and you can get them there to help. Because I think when we think about kittens up a tree, we were just talking, I have somebody dumped a stray at my house the other day, and the first thing it done was climb up our tree. I tried to get my ladder to get it out, and then it just kept going higher. But when you think about a cat or a lost cat or a scared cat or whatever, I think everybody gets this visual of the little kitten up the tree, and here comes the firefighters to come, you know, with the ladder truck and save them.
Like Pleasantville.
Yeah.
Our public works guys are awesome, too. We get ducks and storm drains, and I wouldn't be able to do that without them. So, yeah, it takes a lot of people. That's great.
So even though you're a department of one, you have all these resources available to you out there, right? Well, I'm just thankful that the city of Branson does this, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they don't have to have probably an animal control person or whatever, but I'm just thankful that they do. And then I'm thankful that they provide these resources for you so that you can take care of the animals in our community.
I would say this to everybody that's listening to this episode. Social media has probably changed everything for this young lady, and it has. We spotlighted that a little bit, but the name is Ashley Hurst. Facebook, many of you have probably tagged her or connected her knowing that she is the lady to call. So for us listening to this episode, most importantly, if we need your services, if we need to make sure that an animal is taken care of, how do we make a phone call to the department there and how do we track you down?
You just call the police department. You're welcome to call 911 if you need to. There's also a non-emergency number that you can reach them at as well. Just through the police department, they'll get a hold of me.
Well, Ms. Pam Yancey, as always, I like to give you the final word with our special guest, Ms. Ashley Hurst. Any final words in parting for this episode?
Again, I just love your heart. I think it takes a special person to have that compassion for animals. And I am thrilled that we have someone with your heart in our community that's looking out for, you know, not only the lost pets that have a family to get back to, but the animals that don't have a family, you know, and maybe we can rescue them and we can get them somewhere where Josh Grisham can go adopt one of them when they give them the sad look or whatever. So I love that. I'm thankful for that. And I really appreciate you, Ashley, coming in on your day off to do this podcast with us.
We hope that you enjoyed yourself, young lady.
Yes, and this is having me.
It's a great story to tell. We told Ashley that it did be probably 30 minutes to 45 minutes in this particular episode, and we're right there in that time frame. So again, remember the numbers, remember the website, stay connected to our area shelters, our vet clinics, know the number to call, and we will be great community stewards and partners for our pets out there. And
go volunteer. Go volunteer. Go.
Get leashes. Take dogs on walks.
Go take a walk or go play with a kitty cat. So it really helps them.
Mm-hmm. And also, too, I'm going to use the F word. Foster if you can.
Foster.
If your home is ready, be a foster parent. It is a great thing to do. It is very, very rewarding. More on these episodes, you can find the Heart of the Emergency Worker podcast series, Branson Podcast Network. This series is presented by Arvest Bank. It is our mission to continue to share those stories, our heroes right here in Ozark Mountain Country, our surrounding counties. And if you would like to nominate one, please, we encourage you to do that right there on the podcast page. Click the button, put the bio in. Before you know it, we'll be telling your story on the Heart of the Emergency Worker.